Well, we will start tonight with our memory verse, and this time we are going to say the address first and last. That is really the best way if you are memorizing scripture. That way, if you hear the address, you will think of the verse. If you hear the verse, you will think of the address. So it's always good to start and finish with that. So let's say it together. John 13:17. If you know these things, blessed you are if you do them.
John 13:17.
Thank you, Kelly. I get so mixed up because I am an NASB person, and so it says it backwards. It says, if you know these things, you are blessed if you do them. So I struggle with that.
And we didn't say it after.
Yeah, we did. We did. Okay, last week, Betty, you brought up about, we were talking about the preparation for the Passover, and you said, who, you were there in the upper room, and you were wondering who prepared the Passover. And in my studies this week, I came across the answer, which is wonderful. Luke 22, if you would like to turn there. Luke 22, verse 7 and 8 and 12 and 13. Oops, turned to the wrong one. It says, then came the first day of unleavened bread on which the Passover lamb had to be sacrificed. And Jesus sent Peter and John saying, go and prepare the Passover for us so that we may eat it. And then in 12, it says, and he will show you a large furnished upper room. Prepare it there. And they left and found everything just as he had told them, and they prepared the Passover. So there is your answer. So thankful, just God provides these things. His word is so thorough. So apparently God wanted us to know who prepared that Passover meal. So our author starts out on page 38 with many relationships. We are, believers have the amazing privilege of having many relationships. We are his children, brothers, friends, bride, etc. Of all these relationships, Jesus wanted his disciples to first remember that they were servants. But I'm going to stop us right there. How many of you are not using a New American Standard Bible? Okay. Some years ago, John MacArthur wrote a book called Slave. And how many have read that book? Okay. In that book, he explains that there was, he didn't want to call it a conspiracy, but there's been sort of a cover-up. There is a word in the Greek called doulos. Okay. The word, our English word, servant, is not an accurate translation of that word, doulos. Okay? There are about a half a dozen translations of the word servant in the New Testament, and doulos is not one of them. And yet, if you look in the King James, the New King James, even the ESV, which a lot of people, the English Standard Version, the original American Standard Version, not the New American Standard, but the American Standard Version, the Revised Version, all of those, in most of the places where that word doulos appears, they translate it servant and not slave. And slave is how it ought to be translated. And there is a difference. So I wanted to bring that to your attention because one of the places is in John 13 that we are covering tonight, and I recognize that I'm an NASB person, and mine says slave. And when I realized that she listed out the New King James Version, and that's what we were going through, it translates doulos as servant. So I wanted to give you a little insight. It's a wonderful book that John MacArthur wrote, and I would encourage you to read it. So I'm going to read a little bit from that book just to explain the difference. He says, instead of translating doulos as slave, these translations, meaning the King James, the New King James, all those ones I mentioned, consistently substitute the word servant in its place. Ironically, the Greek language has at least a half a dozen words that can mean servant. The word doulos is not one of them. Whenever it is used, both in the New Testament and in secular Greek literature, it always and only means slave. According to the Theological Dictionary of the New Testament, a foremost authority on the meaning of the Greek terms in Scripture, the word doulos is used exclusively, quote, either to describe the status of a slave or an attitude corresponding to that of a slave. The dictionary continues by noting that the meaning is so unequivocal and self-contained that it is superfluous to give examples of the individual terms or to trace the history of the group. The emphasis here is always on serving as a slave. Hence, we have a service which, now here's the difference. We have a service which is not a matter of choice for the one who renders it, which he has to perform whether he likes it or not, because he is subject as a slave to an alien will, the will of his owner. The term stresses the slave's dependence on his lord. And then John MacArthur goes on to say, while it is true that the duties of a slave and that of a servant may overlap to some degree, there is a key distinction between the two. And this is important. Servants are hired. Slaves are owned. There's a huge difference there. Okay, servants have an element of freedom in choosing whom they work for and what they do. The idea of servanthood maintains some level of self-autonomy and personal rights. Slaves, on the other hand, have no freedom, autonomy, or rights. In the Greco-Roman world, slaves were considered property, to the point that in the eyes of the law, they were regarded as things rather than persons. And I believe they could even kill a slave with no penalty. To be someone's slave was to be his possession, bound to obey his will without hesitation or argument. So if you are not using an NASB, and I found that the NASB does translate it as slave, but if you are not, be careful when you see that word servant, and if you have the ability to look up and see if it is that word doulos. Because if it is doulos, it is slave. And there is just a world of difference between being a servant and being a slave. And I noticed in the study that she always uses the word servant. And there are some times when it's not appropriate to do so. So I just wanted to make you aware of that. This is why it's really important if you have the tools and you can look up keywords and look at the original definitions. And pick up that book, Slave, because it is phenomenal. You will be like lower than dirt by the time you get done reading it, which is where we belong. So,
say the name of the book again.
Slave by John MacArthur.
By John MacArthur.
Yeah. And he even opens the book and he says, it kind of hit him because he was reading one of, I believe it was somebody else's work on being a slave and that word, and it kind of was like a light bulb moment for him, and he realized that he had written all these books trying to explain the essence of the Christian life, and he's like, if I had realized that this word was not translated right and that we are actually slaves, I wouldn't have had to write all those books trying to explain the essence of the Christian life, because that explains it. So, yes.
I know you said, and I remember reading the book too, and I agree with you, feeling lower than dirt, but also being thankful. Mm-hmm. I was like, there's a lot of good things that go along with being a slave of God.
Right.
You really do have to.
The book is very good. See, in our minds, and I think this may have been, because it started with the King James, actually it started before the King James Version, which was written in 1611, translated in 1611. Slavery was big at that time, and slavery was, you know, just a black mark on society. And so it may be that that's why they didn't want to translate that word slave, which is a shame that they chose the word servant. But a slave, like we think of slave, is not slave like back in Jesus's time. Because a slave, sometimes people would sell themselves into slavery because they knew their owner would be obligated to take care of them, mm-hmm. right. and to provide everything for them. And if they were a good owner, they would be well cared for, and they would maybe be better off than they would if they were trying to make a living on their own. And so it's a whole different concept than when we think of the black slaves who came here, who were taken against their will, who were beaten, who were abused. That's not the accurate picture of slave. So, but that very well may be why they translated it servant. So just be, I want you to be aware of that as we go through this. I just thought that was kind of important, that we all kind of have that mindset. Yes, Janet.
I think one of the important things to relate that to is obedience, mm-hmm. because it's easy for us to, if it's translated servant, you know, servant has a choice,
right.
to obey or not, but we are slaves of Christ,
right.
and we don't really have a choice.
Right.
I mean, that is our duty.
We've been
commanded
purchased.
To obey.
Right. We have been bought with a price.
We were purchased. Yes.
We were purchased. And so it's pretty accurate that we are slaves.
We obey out of love, but...
That's because
still,
we have the most wonderful master who takes right. care of us. It is, it's
still,
a wonderful situation.
It's still a command
right.
to obey his commandments. And in Deuteronomy, when God gave Moses, and Moses gave the people... the command to love God, is alone God. So.
Right. And it was for their good and for our good, not because God wanted to oppress them. Right. Okay. So now, question number two. After washing the feet of his disciples, the Lord says, "Do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you say, 'Well, for so I am, for I have given you an example.'" This is John 13, 12, and 13 and 15. So if the physical act of foot washing was all the Lord had done to his disciples, there would have been no need for him to ask if they knew what he had done. If he was simply saying, "I want you to physically go wash each other's feet," that was a pretty good example, and he wouldn't have said, "Do you know what I have done?" It would have been obvious. He had physically washed their feet. So what then had their teacher and Lord done to them? What did he want them to see and learn? Yeah, service, right.
Service even in the point of serving the dirtiest part of their bodies.
Yes, mm-hmm. and the lowest job.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And by the way, it was usually a slave's job to wash feet. Yeah.
They didn't wash their hands or their faces, you know?
Yeah, right. Yes.
The humility that takes.
Right. So Jesus could have simply stayed in his seat and exhorted his disciples to serve one another with a willing and humble heart, right? Had he stayed seated, would the outcome have been different? What do you think? This is not in your books.
They might not have remembered as well.
Good point. Yes, they might not have remembered his words. But Do you think it made an impression on them, seeing Jesus take off his outer garment, wrap a towel around his waist, and then physically get down and wash their filthy feet? That's a good point. Sue?
Just to tack on about it being a physical, like a visual example, because we were talking last week about how we thought, you know, they're all having conversations and stuff, so the words might have been like, if he was just speaking, but he actually, and some people are visual learners, he gave them a perfect visual example of what they were supposed to do.
Right. So Jesus emphasized that he is their teacher and Lord. He said, you call me teacher and Lord, and so I am. So any thoughts on why he might have highlighted those two particular titles at that time?
Well, there are going to be teachers of other people too, or they're going to be teachers of Christ to other people as well, so they will know and understand that they do need to serve.
Mm. That's true. They were going to be leaders in the church, maybe not Lord, but yes, they would be teachers. So there's that. Yeah. Joanne?
And I believe at that time, teachers had elevated position, mm-hmm. and so they were respected, and they were at a high level, basically. Jesus did just the opposite. He went to the lowest level, the level of a slave, and showed that that is what a godly, I guess, teacher would do.
Right.
And that is not an elevated position. And so, you know, consequently, he could say things like, if you want to be the greatest, you need to...
Right, if any of you wants to be first.
Yes.
You need to be last.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
right.
Thank you.
Yeah, and those were very high titles. I mean, Lord, in their society, doesn't get much higher than Lord. So, yeah. Kathy?
When I was reading verse 13 and 14, it says, you call me teacher and Lord, for you say well, for so I am. And then Christ says, if I then your Lord and teacher, that looked to me, first they referred to him as teacher and then Lord, but now, after what has happened in the upper room, I think Christ is saying, now I'm your Lord. I think they learned that he is Lord of servitude, of being a slave. I don't know why. I
didn't notice that before, but you're right. He does switch them.
He does.
He said, you call me teacher and Lord. If I then, the Lord and the teacher, wash your feet. I'm not sure why he switched that.
I don't know, but then I thought they realized, or after that they realized, he is Lord now because he's going back to his Father. So I think that gives a different perspective
maybe.
In our heart. I don't know.
Maybe.
Something.
I mean, I think they called him Lord
yes,
up until
did.
Then.
Yes,
they recognized him as that.
Mm-hmm.
So, anybody else have any thoughts on that? Yes.
Not just the teacher and Lord thing, but not a lot of people know that all those men were taught at home how to pray. They were taught a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
They were rejected. They weren't going to be rabbis. But they were all trained to be. But they couldn't make the grade, so they went to do something else, like fish or whatever. And so, ironically enough, he taught them how to pray when they already basically knew how to pray from their home environment, but they didn't know how to pray like he knew how to pray.
Right. Well, that's why they asked him to teach them.
They had to.
Right. Yeah. And I think that was...
they were not connecting with God.
Right. That was also a very common thing for rabbis to teach their disciples prayers.
Prayer.
And, yeah, how to pray.
I mean, even if you're in any Hebrew school, Yeshiva, they were in a...
Right.
Even the girls are taught to pray.
Mm.
But there's no connect.
Right.
They will tell you, I would like to know God, even though they talk to him.
Right. Okay, number four, knowing and doing are two very different things. Many believers would affirm that they want to be blessed and that service to God and others is commendable, yet in life we often struggle to follow Christ's example of humble servanthood. What things contribute to this daily struggle? Why do we struggle so much?
Pride.
Pride, yes, that's a big one. Yeah, I think we all struggle with pride. Christy?
The desire of the flesh.
Yes, yes. This rotten flesh. Yes, that we have to drag around throughout this life. Yes?
Like selfish?
Yes. I guess you are right. I'm not. No, that's, yeah, we are all selfish, self-centered. Yes, that makes it hard. Carissa?
Not inherently looking for ways to serve.
Yes. That is true. That is very true. We have to be taught that. Thus, Jesus' example. Laura?
We're serving in our own power, our own energy, in our own way.
Right.
Thinking, I'm doing this for the Lord.
Right.
Right. Selfishly.
Yes. That is so true. And then it just doesn't quite fly, does it? When we're thinking to ourselves, I can figure this out. I know how to serve. I know how to do this. And I have the strength to do it. That's like Pastor Mark will talk about our worship service, that we worship the way God has prescribed us to worship, that you cannot make up your own way to worship and that be acceptable to God. We have to do what God tells us and worship him in the way that is acceptable to him. So, yes?
I was going to say, there's also, like, the worldly influence, you know. You do you, me first. It's
yes.
All about the ego.
Yes, and if we're not careful and we're taking in a lot of stuff from the world through what we read, what we watch, who we spend time with, that will very subtly creep in and we will start to think that way and act that way. And we don't need any push that way because we do enough of that ourselves. Yes, Joanne?
Tiredness, work.
That can wear us out, yes, and make us weak. It can. Yes?
And the cares of the world, which kind of encompassed a lot of the things that we talked about, but busyness.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, we take care of our families, we take care of our friends, we have responsibility to the church. And then another thing is sometimes we just want recognition.
There's that flesh again.
Yeah.
Yeah. We want that pat on the back and we want to be recognized. So is there a difference between... It's not in the book. Is there a difference between serving others and seeing ourselves as a servant of others?
Did you mean servant or slave?
Well, we're not a slave of others. We're a slave of Christ.
Okay. Right, yeah.
So, but is there a difference between serving others and seeing ourselves as a servant? Okay, can you explain?
Well, I mean, just seeing yourself as one, you may not actually be serving the person. Like, you might not be doing something that's actually serving them, or have the mindset that they would benefit from it.
So we might have an idea of what serving is in our head that's not actually serving. Is that what you mean? That is very possible. Yes.
Yeah. Having to do with their needs. We might see something we think they need and we can do it for them, but they might have a need that's totally different.
Right. Could be.
And we want to do it our way because it's more comfortable and whatever instead of just doing it.
And we also may...
If they're servant, we would do it the way they would want it.
Right, and we may pick and choose, like, I'll wash his hands, but I don't want to wash his feet. So I'll serve in the way I want to serve, but not in that way, because I don't like that way, right? But yet, if we're have the mindset of I am a servant, we don't choose, right? Yes?
It all boils down to our motives and our attitudes.
Right. Absolutely. It's the heart.
It's the heart.
It's the heart. Right. If we're serving because we want recognition or we want the pat on the back or we want to feel good, which is why you see a lot of people in the world who serve in a lot of ways, but they mean nothing if they're not believers in doing it for Christ. And we can do things in our flesh that don't earn us rewards as well if our motivation is wrong. But if we see ourselves as a slave of Christ and servant, therefore servant of others, that's a whole different mindset, isn't it? That's just complete different motivation.
Well, I think I've heard it said that you'll know what your motivation is when you are seeking to serve and you're actually treated like a servant. Then you'll know.
Right.
Because I know, at least in this church, when we're serving, we are also seeking to do the one another's and encourage one another in our serving. So we're cheering each other on. We're saying, thank you so much for serving me. So it comes down to, well, what if no one ever said that? What if there was no thanks? Then how would you persevere? Would you keep doing things that seemed slave-like, you know?
Right. So if you're serving, you wouldn't. But if you see yourself as a servant, as a slave of Christ, I'm serving because I'm a slave of Christ, then it doesn't matter. If anybody notices, it doesn't matter. If anybody pats you on the back, you know, maybe somebody might even get upset with you for doing something, right? Yes?
In a situation where somebody is disapproving of you or harming you or hurting you, and it could be a husband, the Lord showed me long ago that you're not doing it for him anyway. You're doing it for God.
That is our motive for submitting ourselves to our husbands. It's not because he's the perfect leader, because he probably isn't.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what our mindset should be, is that we are slaves of Christ. Right. We serve because we're slaves of Christ, not because I necessarily like that person and I want to help them. I mean, that's great. Maybe we do feel that way and that's okay. But that shouldn't be our parameters, that I like that person and so I want to serve them because that will make me feel better and that will make them happy. That's, we serve because we're slaves of Christ and this is what he tells us to do. So sounds maybe a little like splitting hairs, but it's not. It really isn't. Okay, so as we think about serving others, Christ is our example. And while the things he faced as a servant were of greater intensity and consequences than anything we will ever experience, there's much we can learn from him. For example, one vital insight is that Jesus was not alone as he humbled himself and served the Father, and neither are we. So the book of Isaiah contains... The book of Isaiah contains four prophetic passages about Jesus, the servant of the Lord. And these are wonderful because they give us insights into God's relationship with his servant Jesus, which can give us a glimpse into God's relationship to us as his servants or slaves. So since we have time, if you don't mind, I would love to read Isaiah 42, 1 through 9, out of the NASB. Behold my servant whom I uphold, my chosen one in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the nations. He will not cry out or raise his voice, nor make his voice heard in the street. A bruised reed he will not break, and a dimly burning wick he will not extinguish. He will faithfully bring forth justice. He will not be disheartened or crushed until he has established justice in the earth, and the coastlands will wait expectantly for his law. Now that was the part about the servant. Thus says God, the Lord, who created the heavens and stretched them out, who spread out the earth and its offspring, who gives breath to the people on it and spirit to those who walk in it. I am the Lord. I have called you in righteousness. I will also hold you by the hand and watch over you, and I will appoint you as a covenant to the people, as a light to the nations, to open blind eyes, to bring out prisoners from the dungeon and those who dwell in darkness from the prison. I am the Lord, that is my name. I will not give my glory to another, nor my praise to graven images. Behold, the former things have come to pass. Now I declare new things. Before they spring forth, I proclaim them to you. Boy, there are so many snatches of phrases from the New Testament in there. So verse 1, she says, what does the Lord reveal about his love and care for his servant? In verse 1, he says he upholds his servant and he delights in his servant. What else does he say?
He chose his servant.
He chose him.
He puts his spirit upon him.
Puts his spirit upon him.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
He will bring justice to the nations through him.
Yes. Anything else? How about verse 6?
He calls him.
Sorry?
He protects him, save God his servant.
Yes, he protects him. It says he holds his hand and he watches over him. And he appoints his servant as what?
Light.
Light. And he gave him as a covenant to the people. So do any of those things apply to us as his servants? Does he call us? Does he hold our hand and watch over us? Now, we may not be a covenant to the people as Jesus was, but we are a light to nations. And we are chosen. So as the servant of the Lord, Jesus left his disciples with an example to follow. He leaves us with the same example. This is number 8 on page 40. I am not going to ask anyone to share because she said, record one troubling situation you're currently facing. We're not going to ask you to share that. But if you don't mind, if you can, in that situation, how would things be different if your primary mindset was, I am a servant, I'm here to serve? It's more like I am a slave of Christ and I'm here to serve. Would that make a difference in your situation? Would anyone like to share how? Megan?
I'll share my troubling situation is parenting.
Me too, me too.
Carissa, block your ears.
It's not a child, it's me, right? Like, what do all my problems have to come at me? So it's hard not to respond to other people, not like, you know, just like telling you thank you all the time. I'm like, you're so wonderful, Mom. You're so right. I should do that. I love when you give me advice. So I wrote, I would be slower to speak if I had an attitude of a servant, and that I would be more careful with my words, a better listener, hearing what needs to be said versus waiting for my time to talk and tell them what I want, tell them the wisdom they so desperately need. Not waiting to see, are they listening? Is this the right time? And this, especially as they're getting older, right? Like, your adult children aren't always calling to talk to you and like saying, just
pour out your wisdom. Sometimes I'm just calling to be like, it was a really crummy day. I failed this thing. So being able to discern that and look for opportunities to serve or help them do something that needs to be done or do the thing that they didn't do that needs to be done and not run to them as I'm doing it to be like, by the way, you didn't do this thing. You were supposed to do it. I was counting on you, X, Y, Z. But remembering I belong to the Lord. I am serving the Lord in laying down my life. And if Christ laid down his life for me, for his church, why can I not go, like, take the garbage to the curb without grumbling in my heart? Shame, right? So,
right.
Yes, it's very, it changes the way that you look at the situation. It has nothing to do with me.
Right. Exactly. It does. It sometimes it can change everything. Would anyone else like to share? Go ahead, Sue.
You're not alone, Megan, number one, about thinking before speaking or acting.
Yeah, you don't have to be a parent for that one.
To anybody else. And I started to write, regard others as more important, do not merely look out for my own interest, but also for others. And I'm like, okay, that's good. I've kind of memorized those verses, but am I doing that? And that's where it's very convicting that God has told us what we need to do. And that's, for me, that's where, that's a lot of the failing, is that it's here, let's put feet to it. Kind of thing, or let's zip it, kind of thing. So, yeah.
Right.
On an opposite note to that, I was not discounting that opposite, but just like that and.
Wait, you got it all under control.
Totally.
She's a pastor's wife. Come on.
Hope you all know that's all a joke right there. I was thinking about how speaking the truth in love is often a way to serve, and Jesus also gave us that example. So he knew that spiritual sickness required medicine, and he was a servant to that. And so, so often when I study things like this and I look at things like this, I'm just thinking about the laying myself down, the putting aside my preferences, the, dying to my wants and desires and even my time and energy, my children, my friends, all those things, but also like the times where it would be appropriate to make God's truth clear instead of being silent or dancing around it or not facing it, so speaking the truth also can be a way of serving others and giving them that life. Not lifeblood, but maybe, but in the grace of that.
Well, and that actually is a way of laying down your life, because for some of us, we struggle with pleasing people. That, which is a matter of pride. We want people to like us. We want people to think well of us. And if we have to give them truth and confront them in love, they might not like us.
They might reject us.
Right. And so we need to be willing to lay down our life in order to bring a sister along and help them. Or our husbands. We're called to do that too. So that's a very good point. Yeah, that's not always. Some of us would rather go take the garbage to the curb than have to speak those hard words to someone. So sometimes those physical acts are easier than speaking the truth in love. Diana, what were you going to say?
I was thinking of time. I like to have my time planned out, and I don't like it when anything changes.
Note to self. Everybody in here, no.
If I'm a slave, my time is not my own.
Ouch.
If something comes along and changes it, the irritation, that's rebellion. Because it's not my time.
Right.
And I'm not...
You're not your
who
own.
Who knows the best way to use it anyway.
Right.
So I say I want to do good time management, but then when God comes along and changes something, it's like, that's not what I meant.
Right. So you just need to have 14,000 kids, and then you... Oh, you,
yeah.
You, you planning is like...
God be merciful. I didn't have it.
Yeah, it is. It's that is true. That is so true. We think that our time is our own, that we have it planned, and we know the best use of our time, God.
Yeah.
You know, and then God brings these things in. Yes.
What's that expression? It's not biblical, but man plans, God laughs.
Yeah, it's more like man plans and God directs his steps.
Yeah.
Yes. Megan.
I was listening to Elizabeth Elliot teaching recently, and she talks about her life being a living sacrifice, having a life that's a living sacrifice, and that's one of her main points, is a soul ambition, which is God's agenda. God sets the agenda, not me.
Right.
And the illustration she shared was that phrase came from a woman who never married, and Elizabeth asked her, you must be familiar with loneliness. Tell me, how do you deal with that? As I'm counseling all these single young ladies that are dealing with loneliness as they're waiting to find a husband. And she said, no, I don't really think I've ever struggled with that. And so she asked her why, and she said, because I don't have an agenda. Mm-hmm. I just have whatever God's agenda is, that's what I'm doing. When I wake up, I say, okay, Lord, what do you have for me today?
Right, and that can be a fine line. Because as managers of our homes, if we have children in the home, you do have to kind of have an agenda.
Yes.
But you have to hold it so loosely some days. You know, you have to strive to try to stick to it and hold it loosely at the same time, which is not always easy. Yeah. Yes. So one of the things that can help us is if we remember that our time is not our own, that God has given us everything pertaining to life and godliness, right? But what if we don't sense his power or his presence in our situation? What do we do? Pray, and what can we know? His word specifically? What do we know? Bible verses, ladies, what do we know?
That in all things God works for good.
Okay, that's Sunday morning, yes.
So regardless of the situation.
Right, it's going to be for our good. We also know I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. We know he will never leave us nor forsake us, right? There's a lot of them. One of the questions in the teacher's manual was, what Bible verses do you know? And I'm like, oh, I'm going to come up with a list. No, because they're everywhere. There's just so many of them where God is promising, I will never leave you or forsake you. I will hold your hand. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. There are just, it's all through the Psalms. It's just everywhere that Jesus is with us. So, you know, if you don't sense or feel his presence, what did we learn a couple studies ago? Are we supposed to listen to ourselves?
No.
Speak to yourself. Speak truth to yourself. Speak scripture to yourself. God is with us. He doesn't leave us. He always helps us. He always does. And he gives us everything we need for life and godliness. So, when it comes to those we parent or disciple, how can we best help them see themselves as servants of God and of others? We're talking about ourselves here, and we're saying, okay, I need to lay down my life. I need to be a servant. I need to be a slave of Christ. But what about those people that we're seeking to influence, like our children and the ladies we may meet with and disciple? How can we best help them to see themselves as servants of God and others? What do you think?
By serving them.
Good idea. By serving them. Being an example, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, that's what Jesus did.
point out when they do it right.
Okay.
Don't bring it to their attention.
Right. Like, we're all told to do that with our children, to try to catch them doing something right and encourage them and notice it. Yes, that's helpful too. Are there ways we can or we do hinder them in their understanding of this call?
Yes.
Who said that?
I think one of the primary ways that we hinder them, especially our children, is when we still have them in our home, we unknowingly prioritize serving others in the church over them.
Yes, we can do that.
We are very willing to serve at church and be cheerful, and we are grumpy at home. The things that God has called us to very clearly in Titus 2, we neglect because we are so busy serving outside of our home, and we are not faithful to go to our husbands and ask, am I doing too much? Mm-hmm. Do you think what I'm doing is suited for this season of my life? Mm-hmm. Do you see any areas that need to be changed? Because it feels good to serve with other people.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think it's easier to serve the people outside our house?
Because they say thank you.
Carissa, are you taking all this in? You have to have a family conference when you get home, okay? Yeah. That is so true, though. Sometimes it is easier to serve people outside our home than to serve the people inside our home. And sometimes we just, it is a cliche saying that familiarity breeds contempt, but sometimes we just assume, well, my husband knows he knows I'm busy. He knows I have these things to do. He knows I'm serving this way. So I don't need to serve him. He can take care of himself. He can get his own dinner on Thursday nights when I run out the door to Bible study, right? guilt. Anyway. Yes, Jill.
Well, since my mom is here, I'm going to say this for her. She had a close friend when I was a child, and the saying that the friend said stuck with my mom and I as well. And it's not a Bible verse, but it was treat your family like guests and your guests like family. Mm-hmm. And that has stuck with me my entire life, that she repeated that to me many times. And I had to confront myself with that. If you've been a guest in our home, I hope we treated you that way.
Yeah, that is the truth. We have certain modes of serving in our home and outside our home, and we need to be careful that we are truly serving our guests, our friends, our church, and our family at the same time. Not just our family. You know, sometimes we can become so enclosed that I'm too busy serving my family and I cannot serve at church. Now, there are seasons, and maybe there's not much you can do at church if you have little ones at home, but there are always things you can do to serve. You cannot say that this is a season and I am not to serve outside of my home. That's rarely. I don't know if I could ever think of a way that would ever be legitimate. But at the same time, we can't always be serving and not taking. It's a balance. All of life is a balance, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Diana?
I think of a poor parent who physically now can't do much at all, and yet he asks for people's prayer requests so he could be praying for them.
What a great example. Yes. Yes, he loved to serve. I don't know if any of you have ever had Clint at your house to do any work or seen him in the kitchen or here, or he loves to serve. And when God made him bedridden, he said, well, I'm still going to serve. I'm going to pray.
Yeah.
That's all he can do. That's what he does. Yes, great example. So is there any other way that we hinder people around us, that we disciple or our children, from being a servant? Megan said that sometimes we are a bad example because we're serving outside in the home and not inside the home, but how else might we? How else might we hinder someone from understanding that role of being a servant?
I think through like having an independent spirit and discouraging them from serving. I know I've struggled with that just being newly married and having been single 39 years, and then suddenly my husband wants to do stuff for me. I'm like, no, I could do it myself. So that independent spirit has kind of hindered not his desire, but his opportunity.
Right. That's an interesting example. Has anybody ever had trouble being served?
Yeah. Because my husband's love language is servant. And so when he gives, he just overgives. I mean, I have to make an appointment to be in the kitchen. I just never had that in my life.
Right.
It's like, okay. You know, and it's hard sometimes because we're both givers, but his is essentially service, acts of service.
Right, and we have to be okay with being served and be gracious about being served and be appreciative about being served. But what about... I think of this. Oh, Christy.
I think being a hypocrite can be a hinder to somebody too, because I remember back when I still lived with my parents, my dad was always telling me, you know, what to do, what, you know, the right thing to do, but he himself didn't do it. So I was never convinced. So I think it's the one thing that I just always struggle with, is when somebody, you know, knows what to do, what's the right thing to do, but they don't do it. But they don't need to do it. It might be the one thing.
That's a really good point. And I think as parents, that's one of our biggest faults, is when we are telling our kids what to do and then yet we are not doing it. You know, we may tell our kids, you need to serve. And we may even serve. But then if we come home and we grumble and complain about serving, that's being a hypocrite, isn't it? It's amazing how much your children see and hear in your home. That's who you really are. And if your children see a different person at home than they see at church, that is a huge stumbling block, just as Christy said. Yes?
There was just recently a Babylon Bee meme where the mom is like picking up stuff and she's saying to the kids, like, I told you three times, as she's doing the job. And I think that's a way, I mean, I'm not a parent, but I think a parent, or I've even done it to a child, where they're trying to do something and you're like, oh, I can do this quicker. And you're taking away their opportunity to learn how to serve by doing that, because you're not being patient and letting them, you know, give it their best effort.
Or it's not good enough for you.
Right.
They didn't clean up good enough for you. And so you're hindering them from wanting to serve, because why would I continue to try to serve when no matter what I do, it's not good enough? Yeah, that's...
If they don't do exactly the way you would, not as good as you would.
In the heart, my husband said to me the other day, I'm like, hey, can you wrap up that food while I do the dishes? And he's like, I'd pick out a bowl, but I'm sure it'll be the wrong one. Were you listening in my kitchen the other day? Yes.
The most common one that I hear is, well, for my husband it was folding towels, but for so many couples it's loading the dishwasher. He doesn't do it right. So
why do it? Guilty. Guilty. Okay, so take note, ladies. These are all ways that we can hinder other people from wanting to be servants. And it is so true, you know. It is just so true. That's why we're all laughing, because we've all been there. Okay. On page 41, number 2, the example of humility and service that Jesus gave his disciples in the upper room was not simply an attention-grabbing object lesson. In fact, the reality behind it gives tremendous weight to the command to follow his example. Was anybody else kind of caught by the similar language in Philippians and 1 Corinthians about Christ? So in the upper room, Christ rose, he laid aside his garments, he took a towel and girded himself, he poured water and washed the feet of his disciples, then he took up his garments, clothed himself, and sat down again. And then when you read those verses about Christ came down from heaven, laid aside his deity, girded himself with human flesh, took the form of a slave, and then God poured out his spirit through Christ, and he washed us by regeneration and renewing by the Holy Spirit. So, on a day-to-day basis, how much of this act of service do we really grasp what Christ did for us? Do you think we honestly keep it first and foremost in our minds and let it drive us and motivate us? Do we? What do you think?
No.
Yeah.
They used to preach Christ crucified more than they do at the pulpits now. Hmm. And because we don't know all the benefits and all what he did for us, I think it's ignored by us. And I think that Mel Gibson tried to do it with a passion, but it was just a little, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can't, but there are so many things that should have been said about what he did, how he did, and it's just not known by us the way it should be.
Right. I think we need to constantly keep it before. What was that book? Janet, is it the Gospel Primer? Mm-hmm. Can you tell the ladies about that book?
Mm-hmm. Is that Vincent's book? Vincent's novel?
I think so,
yeah,
yes.
It's good.
Say it again.
Well, it's about preaching the gospel to yourself every day.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and he even puts it in a format, doesn't he? It's been a long time since I've read it. Mm-hmm. Shame on me.
Very good.
What was it
right?
Called?
A Gospel Primer.
Milton Vincent.
Milton.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's in two different ways in there.
Yes.
Right? Do you remember, Ilse?
Well, what I know is that it's exactly what we were saying, is that preaching the gospel to yourself. It's like rehearsing, mm-hmm. rehearsing the scripture in your mind. It's sort of like the way that the Jews learned of old, you know. They were always repeating, you
right.
know, events, for example, like the taking them out of Egypt.
Right.
You know, rehearsing.
Right.
And it's good to rehearse the goodness of the Lord, you know, by
right.
revisiting the scripture constantly
mm-hmm.
and just
well,
looking at our sin, at the steps of, you know, that we've had to go through. You know, just looking at our sin and coming to terms with it,
mm-hmm.
and then submitting it to the Lord's goodness and grace, and you know, all of those things, and just but doing it daily,
right?
In one way or another,
right?
In one way or another,
and that's the gist of the book
mm-hmm.
is putting it. I think there's one form that's prose, and the other is it straight scripture,
mm-hmm.
and. He just recommends that we have to keep before our minds, in our the front of our minds all the time, what Christ did for us. That's essential. Yes, Janet.
God has been so gracious to me to train myself. That's how I wake up in the morning with those three songs that that I think it's about setting my mind on things above. Mm-hmm. So before I even get out of bed, and it's not loud, it's just in my head, in my thoughts, but oh great mm-hmm. God, before you I kneel, and my heart is filled with thankfulness, and all of those go through the gospel, and help me remember, what Christ has done
right.
for me, and it just brings me such joy to come out in the morning and this day the Lord has made, mm-hmm. let us rejoice and be glad.
Yeah, we're very forgetful, aren't we? We're very forgetful, and we do need to keep it first and foremost in our minds. Day five is we need to get to discussion questions. In one way or another, all of us struggle with the sin of pride. In your own words, why is it so important for a believer to follow Christ's example and have the mindset of a servant? It's on page 43, number 2B.
To witness to others?
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. Be a witness to others.
To glorify Him.
Yeah. That's the only way
to
we
please
do.
Him.
Mm-hmm. The only way we please Him and glorify Him is to have that mindset of a servant to others and a slave of Christ. I mean, what do we have that wasn't given to us? And if it was given to us, why do we act like it wasn't? You know? What did we contribute to our salvation? The sin. Yeah. The reason why Christ had to die. Yeah, it's not something to be proud of. Okay.
I find that if we don't have the right attitude, if I personally don't have the right attitude, I end up landing in a place where I don't want to be, because I end up seeking my own glory,
mm-hmm.
and then I become useless for the kingdom.
Exactly.
Right? Really.
Right.
So since the kingdom is about the King, and it's about His glory, that's the place where I need to be.
Right.
You know, understanding that.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Remembering that.
Yeah, because anything we do for ourselves or in our flesh, or out of pride,
mm.
or for someone else's praise, that's useless. It's wood, hay, and stubble, right? Okay, we are going to go to our discussion groups now because I do not want to short you guys on that time. Okay, let's finish up. I have one last question to ask you guys. I kind of skipped over this because I wanted to make time for discussion, but I think this is important. What are some of the sins that indicate that we do not see ourselves as servants, as slaves of Christ or servants of others? What are some of the sins that we would see that would be the fruit of that? Okay, yeah. Selfishness?
Resentment.
Resentment, yeah. What else?
Hesitation.
Sorry?
Hesitation.
Maybe hesitation?
Well, for me, like, obeying my parents, kind of, like, serving them, I guess. And
okay.
Sometimes, like, if you hesitate to say yes, ma'am, yes, or no.
Right. So not doing. Yeah. What else?
Complaining.
That's a big one. That's a big one. Grumbling.
Even one of the things in doing the study that came to light for me was desiring the greater gifts. Like, in other words, I'm not going to sweep the floor. That's beneath me.
Literally.
Sorry.
Okay, we know what you mean.
And I mean, there is a verse that says we are to desire the greater gifts, but it's like not be envious of someone who is in a position of serving that we might think, I could do that, but yet you're called to do something different.
Right. Well, and that is Christ's whole point.
Yes.
Of washing the disciples' feet. There really is no job that's too low for us to do. Yes. If he would do that, the lowest of the low jobs, then there's nothing beneath us except the floor. But how about impatience?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Impatience.
Oh.
Yes. Not being patient. Or anger? Face it, ladies, how often do we display righteous anger? I think that's somewhat rare. Okay, so if we're feeling angry over something, what is the source of quarrels among us? The lusts of the flesh, the lusts of the heart. We want something and we don't get it. You know, it can seem like righteous anger, like when we've told our kids 3 times to clean up the room and they didn't do it. And then we feel righteously angry, that's not the proper response. It's probably that we haven't trained them properly. It's on us. So we get angry because we're not getting that thing done that we want done. It's not really, truly righteous anger. So there are lots of things we have to look at when we see these things in our life and go, where is that coming from? Do I have a servant's heart? So, okay. To wrap it up, you thought you were going to get out of here without a slide presentation. Called to serve God and others. This is just kind of a wrap-up of everything that we have talked about. We have 2 titles, what to know, what we need to know, and what to do. So what to know, what to do. So we need to know the command. The command is to be a servant, a slave of Christ. It's interesting, if you look up that word doulos is translated bondservant as well. And as I did a search for that, it's interesting because Paul opens his letters and he calls himself Paul, a bondservant or a slave of Christ. Titus 1, Paul, a bondservant of God. James 1:1, James, a bondservant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ. Peter, 2 Peter 1:1, Simon Peter, a bondservant and apostle of Jesus Christ. And Jude 1:1, Jude, a bondservant of Jesus Christ. They all saw themselves as slaves of Christ. Okay, so we need to know the command. We need to know that our example is Christ. And what's the result of obeying the command? What does our memory verse say?
We'll be blessed.
Blessed. Yes. The result is blessing. Maybe not here. You don't get discouraged if you are a servant and you are not blessed by, thank you. Or, wow, you're just, that's so helpful. Okay, sometimes we have to wait until heaven to get our blessing, but we will get it. The reason is so that we are Christ-like, that we have godliness. We are godly, Christ-like. The promises, there are promises attached. That we will have God's presence with us. We saw that in the songs of the suffering servant. We'll have God's power. God promises that he will give us what we need to do his will. He will never leave us short. We'll have God's delight. God does delight in us when we are faithful and serving and obedient. And he will give us his spirit, which helps us in our weaknesses. And God's faithfulness. That's all his promises that he has made us. He is completely 100% faithful all the time. And we will have the Father's love, and we know that he cares for his servants. It doesn't mean you won't have a hard life. It doesn't mean you won't have trials. But it does mean that there is purpose and that he is shaping you into the image of his Son, which is our highest and greatest good. So, what are we to do? We are to have the mindset of a servant. And we ought to remind ourselves every day, what does that mean? What does it look like? When we have a situation, what does it mean to be a servant in this situation? What does it mean to be a slave of Christ in this situation? If we could train our minds to go there, I think we would avoid a lot of sin. We need to trust. We need to trust God. And our sermons right now are so helpful in that. We need to trust that whenever we seek to obey God, that God is using that for our good. We trust. We obey. We rely on God. We don't do it in our own strength. What can we accomplish in our own strength? Nothing. Wood, hay, and stubble. We can do a lot of stuff, but it doesn't please God, and it doesn't accomplish his will, and it doesn't bring about the blessings. It's pretty useless or harmful. We need to humble ourselves. Follow Christ's example. I mean, we talk about him washing feet as being the lowest and dirtiest of jobs, but really the greatest was that he gave his life. And there wasn't one of us who was noble or worth dying for. None of us. But yet he gave his life. So follow Christ's example. And who knows, in the way the world is going, we may be asked to give our lives. We need to desire to be like him, study him, know what it means to be like him. We have to desire that. We need to recognize and confess sin, because that is a big stumbling block. And that's where we can recognize, why am I angry right now? Why am I so impatient right now? You know, does it matter that that guy just cut me off? Does it really matter? Do I deserve better treatment? You don't want what you deserve. We know that. Study and be encouraged by the scriptures. That's our lifeline.